Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could spend part of your day with us. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to be having a very special guest join us in a little bit, Brad Childress, former NFL coach. He spent time with Pat Shurmur with the Philadelphia Eagles from 1999 to 2005, and he also served as Pat Shurmur's offensive coordinator with the Cleveland Browns in 2012, so we're planning to get a great deal of insight from him later on in the program. We're going to talk about the hiring off the top, as Pat Shurmur is going to be the 18th head coach in franchise history, so that means we're going to get to your phone calls in the second half of the program, so we just hope that everybody will hold on tight, but we will get your reaction a little bit later on. And Paul, let's jump into the news. The Giants made it official yesterday. They're going to have his introductory presser on Friday morning. And this is somebody that brings a wealth of experience with him. The keys are he's been a head coach. Mm-hmm. He's run a variety of different offenses. And the most notable is the fact that he helped the Minnesota Vikings get to the NFC Championship game with a balanced attack.
Well, if you look at his career record in the NFL, nearly 20 years in the league as an assistant, as a coordinator, as a head coach, various different opportunities in employment, what we see is a consistent production out of the quarterback position. No matter where he has been, the quarterbacks have had some of their better years, if not their best seasons, while he has been there on staff working with them. And that goes for Keenum or Bradford or McNabb. I mean, just Foles. Go
Even
down the
Cole
list.
Even Cole McCoy, who had a pretty good rookie year when he was first with
Cleveland. He did. So that's the common thread as you look at the production and the results of where he has been. But I don't think there's any doubt, and one of the things I want to talk to Brad about is the fact that he has worked with a variety of different offensive schemes and philosophies, whether it be the original West Coast stuff that comes from the Andy Reid tree, we've talked about that on Giants.com many times before, or it be the Mike Zimmerer philosophy, which is Parcells-based, run, pound the football, have balance. I just think that it's a really good thing that the Giants have a guy who has experienced a number of different dishes, if you will, at the dinner table. You like the food reference?
That's good. See, well, I'm glad. We went through a drought where you didn't use the food reference, so you brought that back. The other individual that I would add to that list is also Nerv Turner, who was briefly the Vikings offensive coordinator before Pat Shurmur took over. So he's even worked with Nerv Turner's philosophy as an offensive coordinator. A lot of different individuals, a number of different quarterbacks, has developed young quarterbacks. I think that is something mm-hmm. that's important to bring to the forefront. And the head coaching experience, this goes back to some of the previous coaches that the Giants have hired, Paul. Redemption sometimes is a storyline. And what I mean by that is somebody who has learned from his experience the first time around and now is out to prove that he can change, he can adapt, and he can evolve as an individual.
Yeah, there's no question that the Browns' job has not been one of the premier jobs in the league since they got back into the NFL following that expansion move. I get it. I get it. It's a very hard job. It's a very difficult thing to deal with all the machinations of the GM changes, the personnel changes, the ownership changes, which, of course, he witnessed firsthand back in 2012. You know, as someone said to me earlier in the week when I was on one of the out-of-town radio stations, look, they looked at it as a positive, the fact that he won 9 games over 2 years in Cleveland.
Which is more than most guys have.
Exactly. Because that was such a dysfunctional operation. And it's a shame, I mean, a flagship franchise like that, although it was then buried and then brought back to life, it's a shame that that happened. But I do think that, you know, having the experiences of the pratfalls, the pitfalls, the hurdles, the detour signs, you know, that's a good thing. Because I firmly believe that you can't maximize your potential. You can't be at your best unless you have faced adversity. Bill Parcells used to tell us all the time about quarterbacks. He would say, you don't know if the guy's the real deal at quarterback until he's had one of those 3 or 4 interception games or until he's gone through a 4-game losing streak. Because those kinds of things will tell you how tough he is. They will tell you how willing he is to learn from his mistakes. And they will tell you how eager he is to continue and to push forward despite the adversity. These are qualities that you can only learn by having some semblance of difficulty.
Normally, everybody can handle success quite well. The question is, can you separate yourself from the rest of the pack when you have to deal with, like you said, some struggles or some issues, and also how you adapt to that. I think that's a big part of it. It's not necessarily the emotions that are involved in that, but when you see that things are not necessarily executing to the level that you expected, Paul, what adjustments do you make, whether it be as a coordinator or a head coach, to say, hey, we've got to make these tweaks to get back on the right track? That's another big part of learning from your previous experiences.
And I think the other thing, too, is that when you look at a guy who's been around the league for so long and in so many different spots and in different roles, the wealth of the pool that he's going to be able to draw from as he puts together his staff is also a very good thing.
Well, the good news is he's worked with so many different individuals over the course of his career that, like you said, to your point, you can pick and choose mm-hmm. from different schemes that you think have worked, and also you'll take into examination and consideration what the Giants roster looks like as well for those hirings.
So. And let's not kid ourselves. You know, when he came in to interview with ownership and general manager Dave Gettleman, they must have understood his philosophy, his mentality, and said, hey, you know what? This guy also understands and respects the Giants system. He's not coming here to buck the system or do something on his own. He's going to fit into the Giants structure.
Understands the culture, understands the identity of what the Giants stand for. Well, we are now joined by a very special guest on the line, and that is none other than former NFL head coach Brad Childress. He worked with Pat Shurmur with two different teams. He was with him in Philadelphia from 1999 to 2005. He was also with him in Cleveland for a season as his offensive coordinator in 2012. Brad Childress now on the line. Brad, Lance Meadow, Paul DeTino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Very well, Coach. Let's start with your experience. You've been around Pat Shurmur for the majority of your career. What are the Giants getting in Pat Shurmur specifically as a head coach?
Well, I'll tell you the first thing is you're getting a great individual, great human being, great family guy. I know him from that standpoint. And then as a football guy, he was coaching tight ends when we started in the bowels of Veterans Stadium there in Philadelphia. He moved up to quarterbacks when I became the coordinator and then moved on to St. Louis. But he's had quite a hand in a number of quarterbacks. And I look at the jobs he did in the last couple of years at Minnesota. You talk about being able to innovate and adjust. That's one of the great things that Pat will be able to do, see what somebody does well and then accentuate it.
You know, let me ask you this, Brad. He was an offensive lineman primarily at Michigan State when he was in college, and yet has become a quarterback guru of sorts, if you will, throughout his career in the NFL. What is it that he looks for in a quarterback, and what is it that he is able to mold? As you said, he adjusts well to make him such a good quarterback coach, so to speak. Again, even though I know he's had a different variety of roles since he's been in the league.
Yeah, I think it's just what you said, the variety of roles. You know, quarterback's one of those roles, but you have to understand how the other positions operate and what their issues are and what their problems are. So that you're able to demonstrate those to the quarterback and help him understand. And then as a quarterback guy, there's a lot of different styles, but most of all, you have to be credible as a teacher. I think Pat gets it. I think he's seen enough of what NFL teams do. He's probably got books on coordinators, but he knows how to attack defenses, and he knows he has the ability to be able to teach the guys that are in his classroom. And then he's got the ability to listen as well, because when you get veteran quarterbacks, particularly, and I'm thinking of Eli in the instance with the Giants, those guys have been through a couple different systems. They have concepts. They've been named different things. I know in our experience here with Alex Smith, they're going to tell you what they're comfortable with. They're going to tell you what they're not comfortable with. And then being able to, like I said, innovate and adjust the scheme that you are going to install.
Let me follow up on that one, Brad. The Giants have Eli Manning here. It's apparent from everything that's been said to this point over the last several weeks that Eli will be the quarterback going forward in 2018. The Giants are a pocket passer kind of team. They've long talked about having more balance and a better running game and a stronger offensive line. But in recent years when Ben McAdoo was here, they showed a lot of tendencies of passing the ball more and doing more of the West Coast-style principles. What do you think, from Shermer's experiences in the league, he will do to morph his system or his fingerprint onto what the Giants are going to try to do?
Well, I think, first of all, it'll take him and Dave sitting down and looking what they in fact have. You know, you may want to be a 60-40 pass-to-run team, but I always think it's important. I think Pat will do a great job of this, coming in and saying, hey, this is what we are right now, particularly taking an inventory when you finish training camp and you start into the season. Who are we? It may not be who you in fact want to be, but I think it's important to realize who you are. And it doesn't mean you stop trying to get where you want to go. It just really is about the people you have, the personnel you have, and what they do and what they do best.
Paul brought up Ben McAdoo and the fact that the Giants have been operating pretty much under an offensive scheme, Brad, that has had some West Coast principles. You know, you and Pat Shermer both come from under Andy Reid, who also has some West Coast principles. I'm curious, how do you feel Pat Shermer's offensive philosophy has evolved? And you could throw in even your own personal experience since the both of you have worked under Andy Reid.
Well, what I think is great is that when he was at Minnesota with North Turner, he's a three-digit guy, and there's about three different kinds of, maybe four now, with the advent of what Chip Kelly brought to the league. But there's three or four different kinds of offenses. There's that three-digit system that Ernie Zampezi started, and a guy like North Turner carried on. And there's two or three, four teams that are doing that. There's West Coast offense. There's what Ron Earhart did years ago, mm-hmm. and New England still runs. Back there, and then, as I mentioned, the Chip Kelly thing. But when you say West Coast, boy, that's such a big blanket. That's like somebody saying somebody's a Tampa 2 team, when, in fact, people that are Tampa 2 teams only play Tampa 2 a third of the game, and the rest of the time is with one high safety, either man or zone. I think what Pat's done is he's changed up some of the run game. You've seen the Mike Shanahan's changed the run game. The John Gruden's have changed the run game. But a lot of the same passing principles. And I think the best thing that we all do is when we see schemes that somebody else is running and it fits what we're doing, we steal that equation and we make it our own, and if you will, and then kind of refine it with what we're doing.
If I can, Brad, let me ask you about Pat the man just a little bit here, because everybody knows that the chemistry in a locker room is very important. You've got so many different kinds of personalities. Some coaches will tell you, well, we got to treat everybody the same. Others will say, well, there are some guys you have to know how to push their buttons as opposed to the guy next to them, and those buttons can be a little bit different. The Giants certainly have some personalities in their locker room, especially a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. How will Pat kind of mesh into that locker room and handle the different styles of folks that he's going to have to deal with in New York, which, as you know, this is a mega media market now. This is about as bright a spotlight as you can get.
No, I get it, and that's why Pat's a great hire, is because he's wired. You know, when we talk about quarterbacks, we talk about we like flat line guys, and I'm not talking about flat line on in a hospital. I'm talking about flat line that are never too high and never too low, you know, and that's Pat. I mean, he's going to take it all in stride. He has spent those years in Philadelphia, which I think is probably thickened his skin a little bit in terms of the media and the fans. But he's always going to be level-headed, and I've always appreciated that about him. You know, he's not going to rant, rave, and stew. He's going to figure out what his problem is and go about solving it.
Talking with Brad Childress, former NFL head coach. He worked with Pat Shermer in Philadelphia as well as in Cleveland, where he served as his offensive coordinator in 2012. On the subject of personality, Brad, you know, you've been a head coach. Pat Shermer's been a head coach. I'm sure as you move along throughout the course of your careers, you always learn something from your previous stints. What do you think Pat took away from his experience in Cleveland, which was his previous stint as a head coach?
Well, you know, I don't know if Cleveland's a great example. Randy Lerner was the owner when he started. Before we went to the field the first day that I was there in the second year. Before we went to the field in 2 days, we had a meeting, which I thought was kind of strange, about 10 minutes before we went to practice, because we had met the night before. And Pat said, look, I want you to hear it from me first. Randy sold the team to Jimmy Haslam, and Jimmy and his dad are going to be here at practice today. So what has he learned? He's learned that things can vacillate at any given moment, and right up to kickoff or right up to the time that you're getting to prepare for a season. I think what's great there is that, you have the established ownership, and I, as many, have a lot of respect for the mayor and the Tisch family and what they've accomplished over the years, and I just think Pat will blend in and be a perfect giant in that organization.
I've got a really kind of hit in the heart kind of question here, Brad, because so many head coaches call their own plays, even if they have offensive coordinators. Others allow the OC to call their plays and maybe just get in the headset. I know that Pat called his own plays in Cleveland the first year. When you came in, I'm not sure if that changed in 2012. Could you describe how the mechanics worked with him, and what would you expect him to do now that he's with the Giants?
Yeah, well, he's going to know the system the best. He's going to, it's got to be able to fall off the play caller's lips. So if it's somebody else's stuff, that's a little bit different till you've been ingrained in it for a year or a couple of years. I don't know what his plan is there. I know that he'll be collaborative in the work. And, if it's anything like it was in Cleveland with us, I'd call the plays. He could make a suggestion. You'd always acquiesce to somebody. They got the 51%, but those guys are, even when I was back in Wisconsin with Barry Alvarez, those guys are looking at the game from a different light as you're calling it. They're looking at different spots. You may have your head down on the sheet, and they may say, hey, let's go after this right corner. He's really struggling out here. So I think he's going to keep his eyes on all of it, but again, it probably remains to be seen whether he's going to call it or somebody else is going to call it. He's certainly going to have the best grasp of what they're doing.
Brad, well, you mentioned the collaboration, which obviously is a big part of having success on offense, and the Giants in their previous regime, with Ben McAdoo, he started off as the play caller, Mike Sullivan took over. In your opinion, from all of your experience, what are the challenges when a head coach also serves simultaneously as the play caller during the course of a game?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've had the discussion with Andy Reid many times, and you miss a lot with your head down on the play sheet. So whether it's the flow or the tempo of the game, whether it's somebody telling you, hey, you got to challenge this because your eyes weren't up, or hey, we need a timeout here, that's the difference. When you're not the play caller, you're taking the whole game in overall. You've got a great feel for the flow of what's going on overall, as opposed to setting something up by looking at a call on your sheet that you're going to call three plays from then with something that you're going to call right then.
You know, when you talk about Pat, it's obvious, Brad. I mean, you've known him for so long. You know all the in and outs about him. How long do you think it's going to take him to acclimate himself to the Giants? I mean, he knew the division from being in Philadelphia for so many years. We all know that there's a Northeast mentality. At least we in the Northeast think there is one. Maybe other people don't. But we do think there's a certain style of a guy who is able to make it here. Sinatra, right? Make it here, make it anywhere. Is there going to be a lot of pressure on him? Will he feel that at all?
Yeah, I don't think he'll feel it. I mean, like, as I mentioned, our time in Philadelphia was eye-opening for all of us, as we walked in. I can remember a first dinner where he and I and Andy were sitting at dinner in Philadelphia, and the table next door happened to recognize Andy, and they said, let's give him a great Philadelphia welcome. And they all stood up and booed in the restaurant. And so he gets it. He gets the East Coast. He gets the Giants fans are passionate. As he's mentioned before, that ride up the turnpike that we took every year, and the crazy fans as we drove in, he knows what the Meadowlands looks like, and he knows what the mentality is. So I don't think there'll be any ramping up to speed. He knows what he's getting into. It's way different than what Minnesota provided him.
Talking with Brad Childress, former NFL head coach, worked with Pat Shurmur in Philadelphia and Cleveland, was his OC in 2012. And related to that subject, Brad, the fact that Pat Shurmur is coming from an NFC team and he is familiar with the NFC East, you alluded to this earlier when you talked about he's going to have to come in, assess this Giants roster. He and Dave Gettleman are going to go back and forth in terms of what they are working with. You went from Philadelphia to Minnesota, so you also made the move within the NFC. How much does that help you when you have familiarity of the conference and maybe you even have familiarity of the Giants roster before you even come in and take over as head coach?
Well, I would say that he's probably done just a little bit of study on the Giants roster. I know they played up until last weekend, but usually you have an agent that's keeping you apprised of what's going on out there, and he'll have some familiarity. He's not that far removed, having been there with Chip Kelly a couple, 3 years ago. But rosters change so fast. What he'll have a feel for is the veteran personnel. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's probably been to a Pro Bowl with Eli and all the Pro Bowls we went to when we didn't win the NFC Championship. So he'll have a pretty good idea of guys. And, you know, it's amazing how guys – jump from one team to another, or you evaluated when they were coming out of college. You know something usually about almost everybody on that roster, how they were acquired, where you had them graded on your board, how you felt about them. So he'll have a pretty good understanding. And then there's other guys he's going to have to roll up his sleeves and go to work on and try to figure out what kind of players they are, in fact.
Brad, final question for me. Every coach, every GM who has a team under his watch will tell you about the kind of player that's his kind of player. For example, Dave Gettleman, when he came back to the Giants just a short time ago as the GM, said, I don't want guys who want to win. I want guys who hate to lose. What kind of player is a Pat Shurmur player?
You know, I think that's a pretty good description. You know, as long as we've been in this business, we dreaded losing, and we'd do anything not to lose. Because, you know, in this business, the highs aren't as high as the lows are low. So you try to put yourself in that position where, you know, that's a dreaded thing to have to come in on a Monday morning, whether it's in Philadelphia or Minnesota or Cleveland or wherever you've been. You'll do anything to avoid that. And so you kind of pour yourself into a game plan every week, and you give it all in those 16 times just to have a chance to go to the postseason. So I think he's going to want guys that hate to lose. And you can say, well, geez, does that mean he wants cheaters, guys that will do anything to win? No, but he's going to want guys that take it right to the line. I mean, that use all their faculties that they have to try to win a football game.
Brad, before we let you go, we certainly appreciate all the time and the insight. Pat Shurmur's coming into a team that had a rough go, missed out on the playoffs. It's always a challenge, as you alluded to, when you take over a franchise. What is priority number one for somebody like Pat Shurmur when he comes in and he's now going to be working with a new GM like Dave Gettleman? You know, when you put together a list of priorities and things you need to tackle in the early stages as a head coach, how does he go about that in the early on, period?
Yeah, well, I'd say this, Lance, the number one thing as an offensive head coach that he's going to need to find is a defensive coordinator. And I know there's been different names batting about. I don't know anything about what's going on out there, but that's what you do. You try to find a guy. I found Mike Tomlin when I went to Minnesota. He was my guy, albeit for 1 year. But when you're an offensive guy, just go back to us in Philadelphia. Andy Reid hired Jim Johnson because he'd gone against him before. He hated playing against his defense. It created problems for him. And he was able to turn over that room to that defensive coordinator and never even look at it. Did him and Jim talk and communicate? Absolutely. But as an offensive head coach, you got to find that guy. And then I think the next thing is finding an offensive line coach and then a good secondary coach, and you're on your way.
Brad Childress, former NFL head coach. He worked with Pat Shurmur in Philadelphia and Cleveland. Kind enough to give us a few minutes. It provides some great insight. Brad, once again, thanks so much for the time. We look forward to interacting with you in the future, and best of luck moving forward.
Appreciate it, Brad.
Good talking to you, man.
Absolutely. That is Brad Childress, former NFL head coach once again, and he worked with Pat Shurmur in Philadelphia and in Cleveland, and tackled a lot of different subjects, Paul, on a variety of different fronts. Talked about the fact that I thought it was interesting, the West Coast philosophy, when you throw out a term like that, it's so wide.
It really is, because everybody talks about how Bill Walsh was the founder of the West Coast offense, but to be perfectly honest with you, there were semblances of that even earlier. Even the Giants, back in 1972, when Norm Snead was the quarterback under Alex Webster, they were doing stuff that wasn't called the West Coast offense, but it was. It was the short dump-offs, the check-downs, the passes in the flat, the quick release. I mean, it was built out of necessity. They had an undersized, less-than-physical offensive line, and that's the way Norm Snead had to operate because he was as immobile as a statue. So, yes, the term takes on so many different meanings to so many different people.
But to then Brad's point, he even mentioned a little of Norv Turner, a little of Andy Reid.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of pick and choose what you like. You look at your own roster, and it becomes sort
of... It's a virtual meatloaf.
There you go. Well, I was waiting for you to make the food analogy, but I think it's appropriate, the food analogy here, in all seriousness, Paul, because that's exactly what Brad Childress mentioned. You're always adapting. You know, you're not just bringing the offense that you utilized in Minnesota when you had a different quarterback, a different running back, and a different wide receiver core, Paul, and you're throwing it on the Giants plate, and you're saying, voila, it's automatically going to work. That's not how the NFL operates.
You know, I took two things to me that just stuck out like a sore thumb, and the adjustment was one of them. And to further enhance that point, he said that, Pat will talk about who are we, not what we want to be. And so... hey, we may not be what I'm hoping for right now, but okay, this is what we got. Let's work with it, which points to your adjustment point. I think that was huge for me because, you know, the Giants, they have what they have right now, and they hope to get some more in the next few months, but that's what they're going to put on the field in September. So that I thought was very important. The other thing that I thought was really, really important here, when he said that about how even keel he is, and how he won't feel the pressure, he'll understand it from being in Philadelphia, and that he's not going to be the kind of guy who's going to get all frantic about it. He's going to be very methodical, very logical, and he's not going to let the pressure overwhelm him. You have to have that mentality if you're going to survive in this fishbowl that is New York City, especially when you have the pressure of trying to turn around a team that was extremely disappointing the year before you got here. I mean, that's a big deal. He can't afford to have thick skin. Thin skin, I mean.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And he's not going to, based on what we heard. So I thought those were very interesting
points. No, I think
that's
an important note in terms of being in Philadelphia, which is a rough environment in itself, and
Knowing
the fans and the demand that they have, and knowing, obviously, the passion that's here in New York. And on that same subject, and, you know, you heard it right from Brad Childress, was the fact that what he could take away from Cleveland. An interesting challenge that he just mentioned that he had to deal with before they even got going was the change in ownership.
No question.
So now you're coming to an organization where ownership is extremely stable, and you don't necessarily have to deal with that curveball that was thrown your way right before you're settling down and putting a staff together. I mean, he mentioned they're just getting on the practice field, and Pat Shurmur's telling Brad Childress, oh, by the way, I was just told the team was sold.
Wow.
That's
not happening here, folks.
That's a very unique experience. Yeah. No, and the reason we bring that up, and I'm glad Brad Childress brought that up, is it's not to sit here and try to rationalize, you know, why 9 games was the only tally of wins in Cleveland. It's to understand when every time a coach has a different stop on the resume, there are different challenges, Paul, in all spots that they're going to have to deal with. And you absorb it. You hope that you learn from it. And then when you get to a stable spot, you realize, okay, what did I take away from those circumstances that now I don't have to deal with, that I could better handle other issues or tackle other areas of the team? And that, to me, is a big part of growing as a head coach.
The one other point that I did glean from our conversation that I thought was very significant, although I know Brad doesn't want to put words in Pat Shurmur's mouth, was when he talked about the play calling.
Yeah.
It seemed clear to me that it was his suggestion, his advice, and based on his experiences, that the offensive coordinator should call the plays with input or oversight from the head coach, that would be Pat, as opposed to Pat trying to call them himself like he did in his first year with the Browns.
I had that same takeaway. If, once again, that's our interpretation of connecting the dots that Brad just mentioned.
Brad, we're not going to have him put words in Pat's mouth.
No, not at all.
We will need to talk to Coach Shurmur when he gets here, but that's what I got from it.
And when we asked a follow-up with respect to the challenges of what it's like when you are the head coach that calls the plays, one of the things he says is, you know, you're so into the sheet that sometimes you may miss a different angle of a play, and that's why the collaborative effort seems to be at least a little bit more effective from his personal experience that Brad was talking about. And remember, Brad Childress was the head coach of the Vikings. He also was an offensive coordinator.
Oh, his perspective is well-rounded.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Appreciate everybody being patient because of the guests and the conversations that Paul and I have had. But we want to open up the phone lines for the remainder of the program so that you have an opportunity to react and weigh into the news that the Giants have officially hired Pat Shurmur as their new head coach, the 18th head coach in franchise history. We'll also check out your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. Joe is in Pennsylvania, and he gets us going. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, you guys did a great job on the interview. I love the questions. Yeah, I really got a lot from it, from both of you. You know, it was dynamite.
Thank you.
That one thing I did get there, but I thought he said that Childress said that Shurmur would at first probably call the plays because, you know what I mean, you're looking at the sheet and he already knows what's in his mind when he wants to play play that. Didn't you get that from that?
He did mention that, Joe. I remember him saying that when you come in as a first-time head coach for a team, you know the offense better than anybody else perhaps on staff, which is, I think, what you're getting at, Joe. And Brad did emphasize that, which is understandable why in 2011, and Paul brought this up, he didn't hire an OC. Pat Shurmur was the head coach and the play caller. Then, after reflecting on it for a season, he then hired Brad Childress, who he had a relationship with in 2012. That could be one option he looks at. Or, Joe, he could have said to himself, hey, I did it that way in 2011 with Cleveland. Now I want to change things up in my first year with the Giants.
I don't think there's any question that as we sit back and wait for Pat Shurmur to get back to New York, again, the press conference Friday at 11 a.m., as far as we know, we believe that'll be televised live on Giants.com. One of the first questions he'll be asked is, do you have an offensive coordinator in mind? And I think perhaps his comfort zone or familiarity with that guy, how tight is he with that guy? That may wind up determining how much freedom he gives him to call the plays. Because if the guy is so well known to him, if he's like a shadow to him, and I'm sure he's got people in the coaching fraternity who he feels very comfortable with, he might just back off and say, okay, he's the guy. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think the possibilities are certainly there.
Yeah, I sort of think that, you know, that he's been around these systems. That's what I do love about it, that he's been in through all these systems and adding his flavor to it, that maybe he'd go with a young guy like that coordinator or the quarterback's coach from the Eagles, you know what I mean, who's a bright mind, and have him come in there and then eventually take over the play calling instead of bringing in somebody like North Turner or something that's going to, you know, just – have his way and want to play, call his plays, you know. What I want to say there, too, did we already hire a new special team coach? Did I get that right?
I didn't see that press release yet.
The only person that's been hired is Pat Shurmur. No word in terms of the staff.
Remember, the head coach is the guy who makes the decisions on the rest of the staff. So it'd be pretty hard.
I thought I read there that whatever, but I guess okay. But Paul,
there have been rumors around, Joe, so you may have read something online, but we all know the internet is always 100% right.
Yeah,
right.
There's been tons of rumors.
I want to ask you, Paul.
Yes, go ahead.
I really like your reasoning. I respect you, your mind, and everything like that, but you are dead set on Webb, am I correct, and not to take another quarterback?
That is my preference, and the only reason – there are two reasons why I would change off of that. A, if Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur did not believe in Davis Webb as a prospect, because if they don't, there's no point in sticking with the guy.
Yeah,
and that's up to them to decide, not me.
I was just reading in that someone watched a lot of film of him that – you know, that Webb in college, you know, you'd have to go by that, and under pressure that he really didn't look good there, you know, but we'll have to see, you know, what goes on there. I just sort of lean that we have an opportunity to get another quarterback, and our chances of hitting on one of these, either Webb or the quarterback we draft to be the future in a couple years, you know, we're just in that great spot to get it. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Joe.
All right, thanks
so much for making the phone call and weighing in.
You know, the only problem I have with those folks who want to criticize Davis Webb and talk about his college film are talking about a limited sample size, because remember, he was at Texas Tech for a short time.
With Patrick Mahomes.
Transferred to California, played there for a short time, and then came out to be with the Giants and basically sat behind Eli like a sponge for the 2017 season. So, A, your sample size in college is not a full four-year sample size. It's a limited sample size, first off. Second off, you have absolutely, unless any of these people who are watching his college tape have been at this facility and have watched Davis Webb, they don't know anything about what this Davis Webb is in January of 2018. All you have are tapes of what Davis Webb was in the fall of 2016. And if you honestly don't believe that this guy has grown as a man, as a person, and as a football player in the last 13 months, then you're just being very naive.
At the end of the day, the sample size of NFL action, whether it's preseason or regular season, is minute. Okay,
it really is.
So there's only limited sample size options that we have to view. In terms of his development, his maturity as an individual, which is what you pointed to, Paul, I think it's fair to say the kid that left college could be different from the player right now entering his second season.
He's got to be.
That, I think, is not a stretch. The other thing that I think is important to note, and Paul and I have brought this up multiple times throughout the season on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and I think it's relevant to add to the table again now. Frank Cignetti, the quarterback's coach for the Giants, invested an awful lot of time in Davis Webb, Paul, during the course of the season. And I'm not just talking about during the course of practice. Before every single game, and we've said this on the program, if you ever came to a Giants game and you got into the stadium early,
we've told
all
these
you
people.
Had to do was, I can't tell you how many times I saw it from up in the press box, you watch Davis Webb going through a simulated game.
Nearly 200 throws, the entire route tree.
And Frank Cignetti was right by him.
Yep.
Directing him, guiding him, and so forth. So that went on the entire season. That I can tell you, and that's not a fictional type of story that we're
making
up here.
And this is before the gates open and the fans can come into the stadium, which is why nobody else would see it. And for those of us who have seen it, you saw him progressively get better in terms of his accuracy, which was something coming out of college that he was criticized for. The other thing in terms of dealing with the pressure was because of a lot of his reads and progressions. Well, guess what? The guy's been watching film every day for the last year with Eli Manning. If that doesn't teach you how to watch film and how to understand schemes more, I don't know what will.
The mental side has certainly expanded. I still go back to, once again, the X's and O's on the field sample size in a game situation is very small, and it's all about will one thing translate to another. Remember, the other thing that is relevant to this conversation, Paul, you and I, about a year ago around this time, we had Jim Zorn on the program.
Yes.
And Jim Zorn, who is a former NFL head coach with the Redskins, he was the one that mentored Davis Webb leading up to the draft. And he had to teach Davis Webb, who had not played under center, how to command the huddle, the jargon of the language in terms of play calling. So, I mean, from that standpoint, he's come an awful long way.
And you will also remember, now, again, I know Zorn was brought in to tutor him, but even Jim himself said that, okay, now he's handing him off to the Giants, and he was not going to be doing any tutoring. It was up to the Giants to handle it. But Jim basically told us he was sending the Giants a legit prospect. He seemed very, very positive and very glowing in his reviews of what he thought Davis Webb could do. And Jim Zorn knows a lot more about NFL quarterbacks than most of what we have seen written out there.
He wanted to give the Giants coaching staff breathing room to do their own thing.
Yes.
He didn't want to hover over them on top of what they're teaching Davis.
But he had believed that he had prepared Davis because he had worked with some of the same principles that the Giants were working with in the pro game. He had believed that he had prepared him as well as he could be for coming into the NFL. Look, there are so many reasons to believe in Davis Webb. It's not even funny. But again, having said that, if Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur look at what's in the files here and look at the practice tapes here and have a chance to work with Davis during the offseason program, and they decide with their educated eye that they need to go get another quarterback, then you've got to tip your hat to them, and you have to trust them because they're being paid a lot of money to make that decision. And I would obviously defer to them in a heartbeat. But I'm telling you, from where I sit, with these amateur eyes to some degree, I believe in Davis Webb.
201-939-4513. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are focusing on the official hiring of Pat Shurmur as the 18th head coach in franchise history. Coach Marvin is in Delaware. Coach Marvin, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Marvin, good to talk to you.
Yeah. I was just listening to you about Davis Webb. Hopefully it all pans out for the kid. With the CBA, I think it's kind of tough for him to get a lot of work in the off time, but hopefully he'll be in some type of quarterback camp or hang around Eli during the offseason.
You know what's funny, Marvin? It's funny you say that because Davis was asked during the final day here, locker room clean out after the season was over, about what his plans were for the offseason. And he said, are you kidding? I'm going to be around and I'm going to be studying. That's what he does. I mean, he is Eli the second when it comes down to his work ethic.
Oh, that's good. Maybe he'll get a chance to work with Jim Zorns in the off season or someone of that nature. But I would like to see him succeed. I would like them to probably trade that pick. I already talked to you that I like Barkley, but I re-evaluated the Barkley situation.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, well, because of Cleveland. Cleveland, they have a lot of ammunition right now. They are under the cap. I think they're under $100 million under the cap. So what's to say they won't go out and get themselves Kirk Cousins and draft Barkley first. You never know with these draft picks.
I would not rule that out. I think that's a very fair point. I've had conversations with people off the air, and you know everybody's assuming quarterback, Coach Marvin. But you're right. Barkley could very well be in play for them because we don't know what's going to happen during the course of free agency. See, that's the thing. We could sit here, and we are going to sit here for the next few months, and we're going to speculate, and we're going to go around in circles. And I get that. Hey, that's part of sports talk, but until free agency starts, you know, it's hard to know exactly how these rosters are going to play out, and then free agency is going to finish, and then a lot of us who have gone back and forth, our philosophies and our outlooks are going to change based on who was brought in to their respective rosters.
That's exactly right. You're 110% correct on that. You don't know until this free agency starts up. We don't even know with the Eli thing until the free agency stuff starts up of what they're looking at to do, and it may depend on Cleveland. There's a lot of things going to go between that time, and I believe Cleveland may do something like that. And with the fourth pick, they can get their offensive lineman, and they solidify their offense with another offensive lineman with the fourth pick. The defense is pretty good. They have Barkley and Cousins,
Here's the other thing to consider, Coach Marvin, the fact that if they did want to go Barkley number one, remember, Cleveland's got the fourth overall pick. They could still take a quarterback, by the way, with the fourth overall pick.
Sure they could.
If they're not high on the guys that they are going to speculate are going to go before them. So that's the other thing that people can't dismiss. Then you could get your running back and your quarterback in the span of four picks.
Marvin, as a coach, let me ask you a question. I want you to bring your coach's cap to this answer. Because I do understand Barkley's spectacular talent and his ability, and I get that, and I certainly would consider taking him if I kept the pick at number two when he was available. But I also am concerned that if that offensive line is not fortified to the level that it needs to be, you're almost, I don't want to say wasting the pick, but you're not getting maximum value out of it, because what happens is that running back doesn't have room to run. He's getting beaten on, and he is paying physically tremendous damage for every yard that he gains. And you're going to be worried about his durability. You're going to worry about his lifespan. Without a bona fide offensive line, a running back at that point in the draft is a very risky thing to do, don't you think?
I can agree with that. I'm not going to say you're wrong. I don't think anybody's 100% wrong in these things, because it's all philosophy and your plan on what you plan on doing. You can take a Barkley and you can do something with your offensive line with your next two picks. You can do something in free agency, like Lance said.
That's the caveat. Yeah, that's the caveat, Marvin. I think I would be willing to change my viewpoint. If they really go and get a couple of offensive linemen in free agency before the draft, I would be much more inclined to take Barkley then. You know what I mean?
I agree with that. All I need is one good offensive lineman in the free agency, and then you take your high two or you move yourself up in the bottom of the first round mm-hmm. and get another offensive line, that'll solidify that. That'll justify why you take a Barkley.
Yeah.
Because I think Barkley, we also got to understand that you are definitely right that you need an offensive line to do whatever you want to do in this game. Mm-hmm. You need a defensive line to do whatever you want to do in this game. Those guys are the ones that justifies what's going on in the game. It's not the guys on the back end. It's the guys in the front.
The trenches,
but,
baby.
Absolutely. The trenches. But you can have a player like a Barkley that can improve your offensive line. He can also – his skills are good enough to make your so-so blocker and a pretty good blocker because of his skills. Watching Fournette this weekend, that offensive line is not the best in the league. But Fournette helps them with the power running that he runs, and he hits those holes. All he needs is a second. As I used to tell my guys, I need 3 seconds. Stay in front of him for 3 seconds,
right,
and then we can do something. And that's all you need. But you're right. You do need a serviceable offensive line. But I think Barkley would be a good pick, but now I feel he may not be there. But the other thing I want to say before we get off is with Sherman, he wasn't my first choice. I like McDaniel. But I'm looking at it, and I'm hoping that he does some of the things I was reading, that if he brings in a Brad Childress and he brings in someone of a Jack Del Rio, you're talking 3 head coaches on this team, all head coaches experience on this staff. And if he can stack this staff, I think he really helped himself if he can do that. And that's what I'm hoping.
All right, Coach Marvin. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And, you know, we've talked about that with other coaches as they've put together their staffs, and it's been a trend that, you know, sometimes they will turn Paul to a coordinator who has also had experience running a team. I turn to the Rams with what they did with Wade Phillips. Now, granted, Sean McVay was a first-time head coach, so there's a tremendous amount of value in having a head coach on your staff. With Pat Shurmur, it's a little bit different, Paul, because Shurmur has been a head coach himself, so
that
it's not
true.
Like he's walking into uncharted territory and needs direction. But even when you're a polished head coach, there is no crime in having somebody else run your defense or run your special teams or whatever it may be that also knows how to run a team as well.
No, I don't think anybody would argue with that. And quite honestly, sometimes it's that other guy who you have next to you who may have experience with a bunch of different schemes that, you know, you weren't comfortable with or you didn't run before. And you can almost make him like your counter and say, listen, I need you to kind of balance the scale for me because I'm not an expert in this kind of scheme.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in handling this kind of situation because I really haven't come across it very much. Even though I was a head coach, you know, I never had a problem player or I never had a player challenge me face-to-face on something before. Has that happened to you? There's value.
Play off of one another.
There's value.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And that's why you can never have too much experience on a team in terms of coaching staff, in terms of players, and you can never have enough depth on a team. Those are the 3 check marks. It's never bad to have too much of those things.
Remember, one thing about players, they get to be in their late 30s, into their 40s, into their 50s. The game doesn't treat them real well. They're not playing anymore. Coaches, we've seen one particular coach make the playoffs this year into his 70s.
Where they don't run out of their gas.
Well, now he's a front
about.
Office
he's
guy.
He's a front office guy.
He was a coach till he was 70, though.
He still has the energy of a 40 or a 50-year-old.
You can coach a lot longer than you can play.
That's fair. The body doesn't necessarily need to be the one thing that's going to guide you when it comes to coaching. All right, let's head back to the lines. Haas is in Jersey. Haas, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Hey, fellas, long time no here. How you doing, Lance?
Hello.
Doing well. How are things with you?
All right. Well, I just wanted to talk about a couple things. First of all, the Pat Shurmur hire, I didn't like it at first, but I completely understood it. And it was to the fact of he understands the NFC East. He understands the Giants' way. So that's positive, and that's always great. The other situation is, is that I believe that if we solidify our offensive line, and Paul, you was talking about this before, as far as going to go get, you don't have to go get high price names, but you can get those dogs that are going to trenches and that will battle for you. And if we turn around and we're able to do that at a reasonable price with these offensive line, with the offensive line, then we can go and get someone like Saquon Barkley or one of the other running backs who are talented or just as talented. And I think that because Eli will be there, we'll have stability there. So, and Davis Webb, I believe in what you say, Paul. I believe in what you say, Lance, because you're there. If you see that he works effortlessly all the time and he's continuing to study and mature and try to perfect his craft, and he's doing it around Eli, then why not? Because then you can use those other pick or that pick to do other things with. So, I completely understand and I agree. And I think that we should not get rid of Steve Spagnuolo. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the guys in the locker room will go to battle for him. And when you're a head coach and you need your defensive coordinator, you want to be able to lean on him. You know that Spags has the ears of those defensive players, so you will never have to worry. So by you having your offensive coordinator and your defensive coordinator who has already been here, and you can then give your input on how you want to change or adjust, you already have continuity there. And that's the most important thing. And then you bring in your offensive coordinator, you begin continuity, and then I say we're off to the races. What you guys think?
Well, Oz, appreciate the phone call. I want to get to a few more calls. Thanks so much for weighing in. I think it's going to be very interesting, Paul, to see how Pat Shurmur puts his staff together. The last caller threw out Spags. It's well documented Spags has a connection to Pat Shurmur, but we got to wait and see. I mean, when Spags was the head coach of the Rams, Shurmur was his offensive coordinator for two seasons. So there is that established relationship, but, you know, once again, it's hard to say that that's definitely going to happen. He may be exploring other options. I think it's too soon to speculate what his staff is going to look like at this point.
I think whoever the head coach is, I'm going to talk generically about head coach X, okay? I'm not talking about Pat Shurmur now because we haven't even met him yet. He's not coming here till Friday to meet us in person. So it's unfair to speak for him. But
you're
coach,
already drawing up plays for him, though. It's important to note. At least the audience should know.
We're ready to go.
Whether he's here Friday or not, that has never stopped you from anything. But anyway, go ahead.
Head Coach X, okay? Head Coach X, when he hires his staff, there are a couple of different ways he can go. He can go by just saying, I want to get guys who I don't know necessarily, but have just blow-away resumes. And they're available. And it's like, wow, this guy's got a great resume. I might want to work with him.
Yeah.
And he's just so qualified that I want to put him on my staff. That does happen. But then there are a lot of other times where head coaches say, hey, I worked with this guy at that organization. I worked with this guy at that school, maybe in college. I played with this guy in college. We worked under the same head coach in another city. And they go with the familiarity deal. And those are two totally separate ways to put a staff together. Some coaches will do a mixture of both. They'll hire three or four guys that they've worked with before, and then the other three or four guys will strictly be interviews.
Or recommendations or whatever it may be.
With resumes being the primary cause of hire. So I have no idea, based on not talking to Pat Shurmur, how he's going to put his staff together. But Coach X, whoever it is, certainly has a selection of ways to go philosophically.
No, I think you bring up an excellent point, Paul, and I've pointed this out on Twitter multiple times. The NFL, even though you do see individuals hire people based on their resumes and they're like, you know what, I loved what he did over there. The NFL, whether it be coaching or players, a lot of it is about relationships. At the end of the day, relationships is a big part of it because it's the trust factor, Paul. It's the fact that you know if you bring this individual in, and he could go into his own corner and work with one facet of your team. You trust that individual. I mean, that has to be established there. I mean, take, for example, look at where a lot of the Giants' assistants under Spags who have gone on and have moved on and have gotten jobs, a lot of them are connected because of previous relationships.
Oh, sure.
So the NFL is a lot about relationships, but you do at the same time see a lot of mixing and matching as well.
And
I
actually
think that's a fair point.
There is a third philosophy in hiring staff members, and I forgot this one before, but remember when Spags came to the Giants originally and became their defensive coordinator, Tom Coughlin went to go get him from Philadelphia. He was the linebackers coach.
Yeah.
It is true. One of the optional philosophies that a coach can use is, hey, I remember playing that team. And I remember how good that offense looked, or that defense looked, or for that matter,
yeah,
those linebackers were just dominant in that game. They never made mistakes. I watched their film. They never made mistakes. Boy, that linebacker coach, he gave us fits. Well, sometimes the philosophy is go get the guy who's giving you the toughest time.
So you don't have to deal with him on the opposing sideline. Fair point. And listen, all you have to do is look at previous regimes here with the Giants. Tom Coughlin had people that he worked with in Jacksonville, Paul. And at the same time, he also brought in some new faces. For example, when they made the change at OC, Ben McAdoo had no established relationship with Tom Coughlin.
Mm-hmm.
That was off of an interview. Then Ben McAdoo's staff. He inherited the likes of a Dave Merritt, for example, on the defensive side of the ball. He kept Spags. But then look at what happened on offense. He also brought in some people that he didn't necessarily have a direct connection to, too.
So those are the three prevailing philosophies that head coaches use. And, again, we'll see what Coach Shermer wants to do.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We go to Dave. Is that Avi? Am I butchering it? Avi. Okay. Avi in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Avi, what's happening?
How you doing?
I mean, I'm in Pennsylvania, but I'm from the Bronx.
Okay. No worries.
First of all, I want to say, you know, it's my first time calling.
Sure.
So I'm always watching the show and everything.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
And
thank you.
Paul, I tweeted with you a couple of times.
That's always dangerous, by the way, but anyway.
I'm sorry?
So I'm Avima21 on Twitter. I've been tweeting with you a couple of times.
Okay.
I got two comments. First of all is the Shermer hire, right? I'm a little disappointed when it comes to that. Yeah, I don't know much about Shermer when it comes to certain things, and I get what he did with Minnesota, and I get what he's done as a coordinator and everything. But I go back to certain situations. It's like, yes, what you do during the regular season with the players and everything is important because it helps you get to the playoffs. But when you're in crunch time, when you're in playoff situation, sometimes they're calling. And I understand you said last time that maybe the head coach is the one that's, you know, giving him the plays and letting him know, go for this and go for that. But I go back to that New Orleans game. You have the Saints on the you have the ball on the 35-yard line of the Saints. And you make three passing plays, right? You first of all, I'm okay with the third down pass because you're trying to get the first down. I get that. But in no way or form, they try to run the ball at least in first and second down and try to force the Saints to kill that last timeout. And it's like, what are you trying to do? You know, you left that timeout on the Saints' pocket, Drew Brees with a timeout, and then you gave the ball back with a minute and 30 seconds to Drew Brees. When you're trailing by only 2 points, you don't even need a touchdown for that.
Yeah,
that was a little bit.
Let me just answer one thing for you there. And until Pat Shermer gets here and we have the chance to talk to him, there's no way to answer for him in that regard. I would only say this. We've tried to explain this on other shows before because the time management question has come up. You don't know. Did the quarterback audible? Did the head coach overrule the offensive coordinator's play and send in something different? Was it in fact the right play to call based on the defense that was shown to the quarterback? There are a lot of variables here before you point a finger and say, oh, the offensive coordinator made an illogical decision on that play call.
A lot of different dynamics in play.
There really are. And I like to say a lot of times you got to peel back the layers of the onion, or you have to look at the different angles in the prism. It's just not that simple to look at it and say, oh, the offensive coordinator made an illogical play call. You can't do that. There are too many things you got to figure out and got to find out before you can evaluate.
Well, and the other thing that I'll add to that related to the last caller's point about referring to what transpired with the Vikings in the playoffs, a coach and a player should not be defined based on one drive, one decision.
No doubt.
That happened at the end of a season, in the middle of a season. You got to look at the entire resume, the philosophy, the leadership, the CEO qualities, all encompassing everything of that individual before you start pointing to, well, you know, I didn't love how this game played out in the fourth quarter and so forth.
The guy's been involved in how many games in his football career?
Exactly.
I'm sure he's had a bunch of duds that he probably wishes he had back too.
Yeah, and then to add to that, it's what we talked about earlier. Remember, you know, when you're the head coach, are you also the offensive play caller? Are you bringing in an OC? You know, how you handle yourself as an OC sometimes is different than how you handle yourself as a head coach.
Anyway, I understand his problem, if you will, with what happened with the game management.
Yeah.
I just don't know where you really have a right to place the blame, being that we're on the outside and don't know the intricacies of exactly what happened.
Yeah, unless you're a microscope that can get in and see what those discussions are about, it's hard to know, you know, what the OC was thinking, what the head coach was thinking, what the quarterback was thinking, and, you know, whether or not there were some changes, on the line of scrimmage. So that is going to wrap things up for us here today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Once again, we want to thank Brad Childress for his time and his insight. That interview in its entirety is going to be placed separately from the program up on Giants.com. So if you missed any component of that interview, hopefully you'll be able to check that out at some point in the next day or so. It'll be up on Giants.com. We will be up and running again tomorrow at noon Eastern. We're going to shift gears a little to coverage of the Senior Bowl. Our very own John Schmoke is there. We will have him call in. We'll get the ins and outs of what's been taking place with practices with the North and South team, as well as some of the media sessions today. And we'll also continue to digest the news that Pat Shurmur is the new head coach of the New York Giants, the 18th coach in franchise history. Once again, thanks everybody for tuning in. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.